Hello and welcome to another episode of the Vinyl Countdown, the podcast where I, Jeremy Levine, break down my favorite vinyl releases from cover to cover and everything in between. On this week's episode, I'm actually going to be doing bi-weekly for this month because this month I'm doing something special. This episode and the next episode for this month, it's going to be record label month. Yay! Something I decided to do to try to talk to people from different corners of the vinyl community, like, you know, indie, video game and video game scores, horror movie scores, the indie DIY scene, right? Like, try to get people from each kind of subset or whatever and just, you know, have a conversation with them about said the industry and their particular place in it, and, you know, just kind of getting some backstories and history of their labels and all that kind of fun stuff, right? This week, the first one coming up is Jake Solzer of Counterintuitive Records. So before we get into the interview, if that name sounds familiar, it's because they have awesome bands such as Origami Angel, one of my favorites, Hospital Bracelet, one of my other favorites, Mom Jeans, Old Soul, Prince Daddy and the Hyena, Retirement Party, I mean, Scottune Network. It's just a wonderful lineup, right? And yeah, I guess that's kind of it for the intro. Like I said, it was a fun talk. I really appreciated him coming on and giving the, you know, taking the time out of his busy schedule and day to talk to me for, you know, 30 minutes or so, 20 minutes. I forget how long it was, but it was really cool. And I hope you all enjoy it. So yeah, have a listen. All right. This is Jeremy Levine from the Vinyl Countdown podcast. I'm here with Jake from Counterintuitive Records. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty well. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Thanks for being on the show. So today, you know, we're going to be, I'd like to ask you a few questions about the label, about some of the bands, some of, again, like the history of everything. And then also, you know, where do you see this in 5 years, 10 years or whatever, and just kind of everything in between that, right? So if you could just give my listeners a little bit of a background on yourself and, you know, what led you to starting a record label.
For sure. Yeah, I definitely was just always really into music growing up. And then in college, I found a band that I just thought had a lot of potential and I wanted to be involved in what they were doing. And that basically led to me starting the label. And that was in 2015. Yeah, and it was just sort of like wanting to attach my name to music I believed in and then doing it again and again until all of a sudden it's my job, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's it's fairly simple, I guess. You know, you just kind of wanted to do it and did it, which is pretty awesome that, you know, you stuck with it. And now it's like, how many bands total are on the roster currently?
I'd say active bands on the roster right now, probably around like 15 or 16. Oh, wow. And then all time, I've probably worked with maybe like 50 or 60 at this point.
Wow. That's awesome, man. Thank you. I've been seeing a lot of buzz kind of generated around a Hospital Bracelet and their debut coming out soon, which I've ordered a copy and I'm anxiously waiting for the records to ship out. But so how's it been like in a situation like that? Like, do they kind of come to you or do you go to them where it's like, hey, I like what you're doing, come over here? Like, how does that usually work with bands?
I'd say I usually am seeking the band out rather than them seeking me out. Just there's like a fair amount of artists that'll be like emailing me their latest stuff. But I'm usually just looking for like what bands are active in their local communities or what bands are playing shows with my bands. And like, just like trying to keep tabs on what bands are basically just like putting in the effort. And they were one that had a lot of mutual friends with bands that I had worked with. So I was seeing the name pop up on like different show flyers and stuff and checked out what they were doing and then reached out to see if they had any new music come in. And then it just ended up that they wrote a really good record. And so,
yeah
it worked out.
That's pretty cool, man. So I guess looking towards like the big picture of everything, like, is it, would you want to keep going? There's like a, I guess, is there like a cap of like, you only want to have so many bands at one time because it's kind of hard to keep track of everything as is, I would imagine. So the bigger it gets, obviously, you may have to add staff or start to really blow it out in this huge thing. Like, is there a conscious decision, like, to try to keep it, you know, sort of small, or is it just like sky's the limit?
It's definitely a combination of, like, I don't want to overextend, because one thing that I've been scared of is like, okay, if I try to rent out an office space, or if I try to do this or that, then all of a sudden I have monthly bills that I have to be generating income to pay. And I just don't want to get in a position where I can't afford to have records do bad, or like not perform the way that we hope, and not generate as much income. And so I definitely want to keep it small enough where I don't have the overhead to worry about. And I can just like put out a record, whether I think it'll sell 5 copies or 5,000, like it doesn't matter. And so in that regards, I want to keep it small, but then also I try to use as many resources as possible so that the bands have the opportunity where if they do sell 5,000 copies, they're not limited by my operation. And I have the functionality to support a band that could sell 25,000 copies or something. And so I want to keep scaling up in that regard while not losing the ability to not have to worry about sales when I factor in like whether I want to put an album out, and also basically, yeah, just like still offering the bands the ability to grow as big as they can.
Yeah. Now, I imagine that approach also is really good for them as far as not having so much pressure to have something, you know, do quote unquote good or great or whatever, you know. I guess the bigger labels is kind of one of those things that they'll go to bands and say like, hey, we want this, and this kind of, and it's I guess people dipping in to the creative process that maybe shouldn't be, you know, and like that, I feel like that would, if I were in a band, I feel like that would really put a lot of unnecessary pressure on.
Yeah. And also having like a quota of like, it might not be said, but like, oh, if this album doesn't sell 1,000 copies, like we're not going to be able to invest as much on the next one that you're already locked in to work with us on or something. Yeah. And so, yeah, I definitely am trying to steer clear of any situations like that where either me or the artist is in a weird spot.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. Like that's, I bet that's pretty refreshing. I would have to say, you know, just seeing how some of the music industry is run and how certain labels do things, even smaller labels sometimes tend to, I guess, go that way with certain things. And it's like, it's not great. It's not good for anybody except for them, I guess. But
I feel like the greatness is short term in those situations. And it's more long-term thinking of my reputation towards artists is more important long-term, keeping the business like successful, than a short-term profit by taking advantage of an artist.
I was going to say, so the way that I got word of the label was initially was Origami Angel, right? Like they were, I think, on Chatterbot before, and then the big announcement came, they swapped over, and then that kind of got me into everything else, sort of like trying to really soak it all in, but there's kind of a lot, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I was trying to sift through what was, who were active, who wasn't, or, you know, just kind of everybody involved, you know, and took me down a really deep, dark, like not to say dark, but a very long rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. You could spend a night jumping from a Wikipedia page to another, just trying to figure out the whole ins and outs of how the last like 5 years have gone, for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. I was gonna say, like, I don't want to, like, not necessarily rank like what's like the first time you got like an oh shit signing, like oh my god, I can't believe I got that band. Like, what was maybe like the first time you got that like real like, oh man, I can't believe I got this done, you know?
I'd say the first time was probably when I got to reissue the early Oso discography, because they had been my favorite band before I had thought up starting the label. And so when that happened, I was just like, wow, like I don't know if there's another album I could do that would ever like feel like this level of achievement. But it's happened so many times along the way with like the first record, Bay Faction, did super well. And I was just like, wow, I can't believe not only how good the record is and that I got to do it, but that like it ended up being so well received. And then same thing, like when I did Mom Jean's first record, and then got to do Prince Daddy's record, and Origami and Hospital Bracelet, and like the list goes on and on, where it's just like, wow, like I'm stoked that I get to do this, and then I'm even more stoked at how like crazy the reception is for the record.
Yeah, I imagine that's it's pretty good feeling. It doesn't really, like, each time it happens, it's like, fuck yeah, it's great. And then
yeah, exactly.
It's just like, it's I guess that's part of the gratification of doing what you do, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of getting to work with bands, and not only just like, I guess working with bands that you like and that you believe in what they're doing, and you know, that's one thing. Again, you know, you kind of see some labels where they'll have a lot of bands signed or whatever, but it doesn't necessarily feel like they're super into whatever band might be doing, right? Like, it's not.
Mm-hmm. It's a little more like cut and dry. Like, this is how we release a record.
Yeah,
we do it over and over and over again. Yeah, I definitely try to avoid that kind of feeling.
Yeah, it's funny, it's kind of, I guess, the reason why I started doing this was initially because I was like talking about music and I love it and everything else, but the eventual idea was like, maybe I could talk to somebody in a band once, maybe, who, you know. And then mm-hmm. when it actually happens a few times, where it's like, the first time it's like, holy shit, you want to come on the show? Okay, cool. And then as it goes on, it's like, you think, I think I was like, okay, I'm gonna get used to it, it's not gonna be that big of a deal, you know, it's just part of the show. But then it keeps going, I'm like, holy mm-hmm. shit, you know. It's good, it keeps me excited. that's kind of, that feeling is pretty great. And
yeah, that's definitely part of the reason it makes it a fun thing to pursue.
Yeah, so coming up, before we start recording, I mentioned, you know, you're doing a lot of releases and everything else. I saw, I think this morning, we had a new, there was an Origami Angel, Jesus Christ, I can't talk, repress, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's, what other projects that you can talk about, I guess, that are kind of coming up, like some things that you're excited about releasing?
Yeah, we got a bunch of stuff coming up. I was really excited about that. We always have something like different cooking with Origami Angel. And in a couple days, we're announcing Nervous Dater's new record. So I imagine by the time this is released, that'll have been announced. And I'm really excited about that because they've been quiet since their last records was like 3 years ago at this point. They're a really cool band. And I feel like that's going to bring in a lot of the fans that have found my label in the last few years, might not have gone back and found their album that we did in 2017. So I think that not only will this new album be awesome, but it might help a lot of people find the old one too. And then yeah, the Hospital Bracelet record just came out, and the vinyl should be in the next couple months. It's got a bunch of different stuff with Ska Tune Network that I'm really excited about. Jeremy's just like a force and is writing album after album basically. And so there's a ton of cool stuff coming there. And then I was just in a studio with Prince Daddy and the Hyena, and they're wrapping up their third record at the moment, and so hopefully that'll be out sometime this year, and that's definitely like a very anticipated one for me.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Speaking of, I guess this year, you know, last year was really tough on a lot of artists, venues, everybody with COVID, right? And mm-hmm. Not being able to tour, or, you know, you had a lot of venues shutting down. Mm-hmm. I know here where I live is a fairly small town. So if there was something putting on local music and it was already kind of small, it just, a lot of things tanked.
It's gone. And, yeah.
And I mean, it's just, it's devastating for the local community for numerous reasons. One, just economically, people without jobs, but then also for the music scene or anything else, like, it makes it really tough.
Yeah, the culture,
you know. So 100%. I'm assuming, you know, everybody's really, I know we're all looking forward to this year, possibly, you know, fingers crossed that things can kind of come back to normal, you know. So I guess with all that said, I'm curious, so what would be the first show you want to see, like, once things are finally back to normal and it's safe mm-hmm. to go out and safe to go to a concert, what's like your dream return to live music lineup?
That's so tough because I feel like there's different dreams for different styles of show. Like, I definitely want to see like Prince Daddy playing to like 200 people in a sold out venue, but I also like really want to see The Weeknd playing like an arena show. So like I'd say that like honestly, The Weeknd's the only person I've been thinking about like buying a ticket now, just in case the tours do happen this summer. But yeah, I really don't think they will. But
yeah,
there's definitely like, it's hard to say because like some of the bands, like I've never seen Hospital Bracelet live, and so like that'll be really cool. I've only seen Origami Angel live like once or twice, and so I was really excited because they were about to play Boston for the first time. And so I definitely want to see that happen. And then like the day that lockdown started, there was supposed to be like a Prince Daddy, Oso, Just Friends, Sincere Engineer show in Boston at like a venue I've been going to for the last 10 years. And it was going to be like the biggest venue any of them had ever played, let alone headlined it. And so that was like really tough to miss, but I'm looking forward to hopefully replicating it once shows are back.
Yeah. And we, my wife and I actually, we had tickets, I think, to see Brittany Howard in Houston, like 5 days after everything shut down, I guess. And there was some,
so tough.
Like there's some idea of like, well, they might still do the show. And then as it got closer, mm-hmm. closer, it was like, no, it's canceled.
Yeah. It was like, okay, show's canceled. We'll redo it in 2 weeks. And then, okay, we'll redo it in 2 months. And then, okay, maybe 2 years.
Yeah. It definitely didn't. I didn't expect to get that bad, which I mean, I guess nobody really did. But I was kind of lucky before, right? Like the very last show I saw was Pup, I think the month before.
Oh, nice.
And looking back, even that though, it was like the end of February, and it was COVID was here, I guess, but wasn't nearly as bad. And I even remember my wife thinking, like, are you sure you want to go to a concert? It's like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then like 3 weeks later, the whole country shuts down. So it's like, oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like that must have been right around when like South By got canceled, and I feel like that was the thing for me that was like, what, why are they doing that? That seems like a little much.
Yeah. Then I think when the NBA finally called it quits on their season,
that's when
I think it set in for me like, oh, this is serious.
Yeah, like this is going to affect like everything.
Yeah, because I mean that's a lot of money they're losing to do that. I mean, they're worth ungodly amounts of money anyway, but the idea.
Yeah, but like somebody on that scale, like that's really legitimizing to the situation.
Yeah, that's it's scary. But
yeah,
hopefully moving forward with the new administration or whatever, hopefully things maybe get on track. And I don't expect it for this year, but you know, 2022, that's our year, right? That's
I'm starting to hold out hope for like a November December tour to be possible. So
yeah,
I haven't had hope for a while, so that's at least good.
Yeah. Oh shit, my Siri decided to just open up and start talking for some reason. But so I'm trying to think. So tours coming back, that's one thing, right? We're all looking forward to new releases and everything else. And like I said, so moving forward into like, you know, 5 year plan, right? Like what's like a dream signing for the label? Like what's somebody that you think of like, man, I really would like to get them on. I'd love to work with them, or at least maybe not even get them on the label, but work with in just some work capacity, with them in some, you know?
I feel like it's hard to say because there's a lot of artists that I love that I just know like, oh, they're on like a major label. Like there's, even if they took the step back to an indie label, like it's not realistic for me to consider that they would work with me. But a dream band would definitely be White Reaper. I don't know if you're familiar, but they're on Elektra Records. And they had a record last year, or I'm mixing up my years now, I think 2019 even, called You Deserve Love. That was like one of my favorite records I've heard in a long time. And so they're just like, they were about to like tour with Pearl Jam and stuff like that. So they're way out of like the realm of any band I would ever get to work with, but they're one of my favorites at the moment.
Nice. That's okay.
Oh yeah. So I feel like there's like a few different tiers of like the dream ones like that are like, okay, there's no way they're ever going to work with an indie label again. And then the ones that, that like a band like Pup, they have their own label they just started that like they work with Rise Records a little bit, but like I feel like it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for them to be like, oh, maybe for whatever reason, like maybe if I just got to know them or something, they would be like, oh, let's do like an EP together or something.
Yeah.
I don't think that would ever happen, but I feel like that's at least a bit closer in the realm of possibility. And that would be an absolute dream. Yeah. Or like Jeff Rosenstock or.
Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like one of my dream lineups for a tour is Puff and Jeff Rosenstock together. Cause I know that Jeff like helped them write Morbid Stuff. And then I think they helped a little on either on Post or No Dream as well. And like, there's a lot of creative, you know, back and forth. I would love to see them on. It'd be like I said, that'd be one of my dream tours, you know?
Yeah, that would be great.
I did see Screaming Females with them in the Drew Thompson Foundation, which is really awesome. But I mean, I would trade honestly both of them for Jeff Rosenstock in their place.
Yeah.
I guess.
Oh yeah. There aren't many bands I wouldn't trade for Jeff Rosenstock. So
yeah. One thing about him too, like I love that he seems like super genuine and like
absolutely
I think he put out like a it was something like 2020 I forget the name of it but it was something on Bandcamp and he's
2020
like,
dump
yeah and he's just like yeah fucking take this I don't care
just yeah like, just like I'm not gonna release this otherwise like might as well just put it out
yeah I mean
but then he's also working on like Cartoon Network shows at the same time yeah. It's just like the man can simply do it all
yeah that was pretty shocking when I found that out that he wrote the theme song and. I think it's the ending for whatever show that was on
Craig at a Creek. Yeah, he does the full music for like the entire show.
Oh shit! Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's like really like I don't know how you land that gig coming from like being in a punk band, but
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
And it kind of it reminds me of the Jackie Chan cartoon show or whatever from like the early 2000s. There's a song that's like Chan's the man or something like that. Mm-hmm. And all that is, it's like a repurposed Weedus song.
Really?
I think their original bassist like wrote that song that was kind of like his song. And then he took it to, I guess, executives or whatever. And they were like, yeah, we want that. Just change the lyrics. And it's like, the actual song is called Punk Ass Bitch. So it's like way off.
Is it by Weedus?
Yes. It's on their
on the show on the show version album. Also.
Yeah, I think the show version is actually like I said, I think it's their bassist or old bassist singing it and everything. Wow. But it's
that's
still
cool.
Like, it was a quote unquote Weedus song at one point.
Uh-huh.
It was like super
that they repurposed.
Yeah, and they're like, hey, wow. We like the melody, none of the lyrics, but let's use this for a Jackie Chan cartoon show.
Probably a good call on the lyrics if it's gonna be for a cartoon.
I would think so. That's but it's always kind of funny, like you hear stuff like that, like there's an artist that's doing one thing and then they also can just do other things that are just like really surprising, I guess, that they'd be able to do that kind of gig or whatever, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so for I guess for me that's all I have. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Perfect.
Anything beyond I guess what you've already plugged, right?
Check out the new Nervous Data record, it should be out by now, and then keep your eyes peeled for like a couple other announcements coming at the end of the month that should hopefully be really good. I think people will like them a lot.
All right. What about any social media you want to get out there for people to find, track the label down or?
Definitely. Yeah. I'm just at CIREX on Twitter and Instagram and at Jake CIREX on TikTok.
Sweet. All right.
Oh, well, yeah.
Again, thank you for doing this. I appreciate your time and take it easy, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the interest in the label and wanted to talk to me about it. So yeah, have a good one and hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right. Later.
All right. So that was the interview. I hope you all enjoyed it. Like I said, in the intro, I had a really good time and was super excited to land that interview as well. And just kind of getting back in the saddle, kind of getting back in the swing of things after taking some time off and then kind of like, you know, getting things in order to try to bring all this really cool shit to all of you guys and gals, my listeners. So the next episode will actually be with Justin and Aaron from Ship to Shore Phono Co., which, again, very fun. Really hope you all stick around, subscribe, and do all that kind of stuff so you don't miss it. And yeah, I think it'll be a good time. So with all of that, I am Jeremy Levine, as always. This has been The Vinyl Countdown. I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope to be in your ears next week, everybody. Take care.